Be advised, the Digital Graveyard contains the following: adult language, bad advice, and spoilers. There will be no further warnings. Consider yourself disclaimed.
Encased in frozen ice for 1,000 years and now free to wreak havoc on this mortal plane, it's the Digital Graveyard. I'm Graves, one half, co-host, and with me as always...
You got Bobby Digital. We are recording here on January 19th, 2021, and it's so weird to say that right now.
It is weird to say that.
It's weird to say, yeah, it's weird that we're in a brand new decade, but yeah, that little additive Eric just added here at the beginning is in reference to the Iceman.
Yeah, for those who follow us on Facebook in the Digital Graveyard, do it if you don't. But you probably already saw the pictures that we posted, me and Bobby. Live in Minnesota. We haven't disguised that or hidden that fact. We proudly live in Minnesota, who has a long storied history of Iceman. But one such Iceman appeared just last week, I think. There was a local artist who sculpted a caveman in a block of ice and put him out in a local park, and we went and found him. His name is Zug Zug. He's joining our band.
Yeah, no, it was super cool, and yeah, because you wanted to go out there and like get pictures with it and just see it in general, because it's a neat thing.
Yeah, I wanted to just see it, and then I kind of thought, well, because we were talking about recording, I was just like, well, we could totally get a picture. This is the perfect thing to put on our face. This is exactly the stupid kind of shit we do.
Yeah, it's on it's on brand bullshit for us, but yeah, like. At first, we immediately were, like, going the wrong way.
We've never been to this place. This is at Timothy Worth Park in Minneapolis.
Theodore Worth Park.
See, yeah. We were just there, like, an hour ago, and I've already forgotten. It's one of the larger parks in the Minneapolis area. Yeah, our cities have really big parks because, we're with it. But, Yeah. Me and Bobby had never been there before, and it's skiing season right now, because it just snowed, everybody was out there skiing, we were like, there's no trails, we can't see the trails, Bobby, you pull up, the first thing I say to you, I think this is gonna be way more difficult, we gotta find him, like, so we go off into the trails, into the woods, as the sun is setting, looking for this Minnesota Iceman, and he's like, oh, I see him over there, he's on the other side of the creek, like, right next to the sidewalk. Like, yeah. Literally, like, within yards of where I parked.
It's literally, if we just walked, like, 10 more feet, we would have seen it.
If I had looked around when I exited my vehicle, I would have seen it. Sadly, the hindsight is 20/20.
In some ways, that's kind of disappointing in a way, that it wasn't, like, hidden.
That would have been fun. But you gotta think, like, that thing must have weighed hundreds of pounds. Like, nobody's gonna drag that into the woods.
Yeah, especially because, like, it looked like they made a base for it and everything. Like, yeah. It is in there.
So that's just a fun little thing that, I mean, we always start the show off with pleasantries, and that's just a fun thing that me and Bobby both did. But in terms of pleasantries, like, what have, well, I know one thing that we've both been watching, but, Bobby, you gonna go take the torch with this one?
Yeah, so this week, we actually ordered Steven Universe, the complete series.
Damn!
On DVD. And
I borrow it?
Oh, for sure, when we're done.
Okay.
Yeah, we decided to start off at season 5, because you know how messed up Cartoon Network was with, like, whenever that was... would air?
No, I don't, I do not know any of the behind-the-scenes stuff of Steven Universe.
Well, it's just that when it was on Cartoon Network, like, they would move its time slot around constantly. Mm. Or, like, they would do, like, 3 episodes and then break for months.
Wow.
So, like, I didn't get to watch season 5 at all. So, we marathoned that through, and now we're going through Steven Universe Future, and... I know you love Steven Universe.
I do. I love it.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not like, I'm not going to be like a brony about it or anything, but I do think it was the, like, pinnacle of this new age of, I don't want to call it, like, enlightened animation, but this very philosophical, introspective, like, let's analyze feelings and let's analyze everything, like, our society and everything. It's just a really brilliant... I mean, everybody was going to credit Adventure Time to that, and they should. Like, Adventure Time, I do think, started this trend. It's inarguable to say, really, but I think Steven Universe definitely is, more so than Adventure Time ever was, just a very deep and emotionally intelligent animation that just kind of raises the bar. So yeah, I respect the hell out of it.
Yeah, they're both really good shows. And I mean, that's to be expected because both Rebecca Sugar created Steven Universe, but she worked on Adventure Time.
Yeah, yep.
Yeah, she did the music for Adventure Time.
I don't know if we've talked about it before, how like animators just have these circles that they all kind of like work in. Because I know like, what was it, Pendleton Ward is created Adventure Time.
Yeah.
But he used to work for Thurip Van Orman, who made the Misadventures of Flapjack. Also working on the Misadventures of Flapjack was J.G. Quintel, who would later go on to do Regular Show. Like, everybody, they all know each other. It's super weird. Gravity Falls, like, what's his name? Alex Hirsch knows those guys, too.
Yeah, and Alex Hirsch at least helped with, like, Owl House.
Oh, yeah.
Which is on now. And, all those animators seem to know each other. There's always, like a 3 degrees of separation with all of them.
Well, I think the old story that, I mean, I don't know how true this is, but the rumor was always that it was Craig McCracken, Seth MacFarlane, and Butch Hartman all lived together in college or something like that. Something like that.
I don't know how true that would be, but amazing if true.
Yeah. I think that's just a rumor. But stories have been around for a while, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, anyway. For sure. So we've been watching that, and my gosh, like, I knew how Steven Universe ended, but actually watching it unfold before me was just like, it was amazing. I love even the subtle details, like Connie got a haircut. So that meant anytime that they fused into Stevani, she looked completely different.
Yeah, it's, you know,
it's just subtle things like that. I love shows that do that.
Shows that get better the more you watch it. Like, so many people are like, why would you rewatch this show? Why would you rewatch, like, The Office? Look how long, you know? Like, why would you rewatch Friends? Look how long it is. Like, yeah, I get that, but if you really love those, like, you're gonna memorize all the Chandler jokes or whatever. But nowadays, I just feel like it's we've reached sort of a pinnacle, which is a little reductive because we could be on the precipice of something even more amazing in the next few years, but just tons of shows now are just so good, better the second or third time you watch them. Which is crazy to say, because how can something be better than the first time when it's new and you experience it? But the one I mention all the time is Attack on Titan, which I've mentioned before on the show, is in its final season, and I do not watch subtitle anime. I don't do it. Like, I just don't have... All due respect to people who do, I just don't have, like, the mental attention span to do it.
No, for real. And I'm right there with you. It's like, I wait until it's offered, and I only watch subbed if I know it's not coming.
Yeah. I have to watch the new season of Attack on Titan subbed, though, because I need to watch it. And it's, I've rewatched Attack on all of it. 3 seasons. All of it. Twice watching, and the new season's not even done yet, but because every time I go back and rewatch it, it's like, this is amazing. This is like, this was happening at this time. These characters were doing this at this time. Like, it's phenomenal. And I think Gravity Falls is another great example. I think Game of Thrones, compare Game of Thrones to Steven Universe. But we're not the first people to have done that on the internet. At this pinnacle, because these shows were the two most popular shows at the time, the most popular children's entertainment at the time, and the most popular adult entertainment at the time. They really are just a defining pinnacle of... I use the word pinnacle so many times in this podcast already, didn't I?
Yeah.
I never say the word pinnacle, but those two are just these perfect shining examples of this is great television in the 2010s. You know, it was. It was really just a product of its time. It's amazing.
It's definitely one of those things that I think a few years from now, we're going to look back and be like, that was the show that defined this generation.
Somebody who worked on Steven Universe is going to make the next Steven Universe, the next Adventure Time or something. Yeah. And we'll be like, oh, that guy who did sound editing or storyboarding for that one? Yeah. Something like that. but it's going to happen, because that's how all of the shows have worked out.
For real. Name any show that you kind of loved, and it was like, yeah, there's always like, I had a low-paying job for this show, and then they gave me a shot.
Yeah, and Penn Ward was like, hey, this guy is working, so Penn Ward put in a good word for this guy, and then this guy got a show. Like, that happens all the time.
Well, I know that's how it worked with things like Powerpuff Girls is a great example. Yeah. Because who was that?
Craig McCracken.
Yeah, he worked on Dexter's Lab.
Yeah.
And they...
I think a little bit on Johnny Bravo, too.
And a little on Johnny Bravo, yeah. And so they gave him a shot, with Powerpuff Girls. And Powerpuff Girls is arguably one of the best old school Cartoon Network shows.
Dude, and just, I mean, the career of Craig McCracken, who you've brought up on the show before, like, yeah, it all started with Powerpuff Girls, but, like, Craig McCracken made Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends, he made Wander Over Yonder, which is a criminally underrated cartoon, in my opinion. Craig McCracken's amazing, dude.
I think he has a new show coming soon.
Good, do it. Yeah. Never let that man retire. We owe it to the children to just keep Craig McCracken alive as long as possible so he can never stop working.
Yeah. I also know, you mentioned him a little earlier, but Seth MacFarlane, he worked on Johnny Bravo.
He did. He did the music on Johnny Bravo.
He did all the musical episodes, because there's three.
Yeah.
Like, and he did them all.
Yeah, the ones with Donny Osmond. He did the one that I remember the most is that guy who's trying to teach Johnny manners.
Yes.
And then turns out to be a creep at the end. Yeah. Like, that was like, I think Seth MacFarlane actually, like, was the showrunner for that one, too. So it's like, yeah, every musical episode of Johnny Bravo was Seth MacFarlane. Was the guy who went on to make Family Guy.
Yeah.
Like, it's insane.
Who dominates Fox Animation.
Like, yeah, she asked for a show and they give him one.
Yeah. It's just like, yeah, I mean, they're all pretty cookie cutter.
Well, since we are doing the pleasantries, and speaking of adult animation, since we just kind of naturally segued to that, I checked out the new season of Disenchanted on Netflix.
Oh, okay. I'm still in season two, but season I did two. Watch a couple episodes into it because I want to get into season three.
How far are you in season two if you don't mind asking?
The last thing I remember was the one-eyed octopus episode.
Yeah, her little brother.
Yeah,
befriends the octopus. So yeah, you're getting close to the end there. Like, obviously, season two starts with like an incredibly like tense sort of situation. For those who don't know Disenchanted, it's takes place in Dreamland. It's about a princess who's like a tomboy and an elf named Elfo who's the bad boy of the elves.
Yeah.
Even he's just like, so he says dang it instead of like I'll sprinkle it or whatever whatever they say, and a demon voiced by Eric Andre who is sent to turn the princess into like basically be her like the devil on her shoulder, but literally.
Yeah.
It's created by
Matt Groening.
Matt Groening, thank you. Why was I blanking on his name?
You love Matt Groening.
It would be a lie to say that I haven't watched almost the entirety of his body of work. I don't know if I love Matt Groening, but I would not be the person I am without the existence of his shows. Who created The Simpsons and Futurama, obviously. That Matt Groening. A lot of voice actors from those shows in various roles in Disenchanted. Yeah. It's, of course, a Netflix exclusive. Season 3... It's weird to say because it's a very funny show. It's an adult animated comedy, much like Futurama, much more like Futurama than The Simpsons, although it is its own sort of animal in the jokes and the storytelling. You start with season two. Season two starts with, season one ends with, spoilers, the princess, the main character's mother coming back from the dead and revealing that she's actually a villain and she died trying to kill her dad to seize the power of the throne.
Yeah.
So we know that as the viewers. The main character doesn't know that. So the beginning of season two is obviously a very tense situation because of that. And the rest of season two is just kind of more funny, goofy bullshit.
Yeah.
Season three still has that funny, goofy bullshit, but it's a lot more of that like high stakes, political, almost like Game of Thrones-esque drama about it. So I won't get into too much detail with that, but season three, I got to the end of season three and I once again found myself wishing there was more episodes of each season. Like, Disenchanted is, it is so stylish to rag on Matt Groening and rag on The Simpsons, but by God,
when he has a good idea, he goes.
Well,
for
The Simpsons only really stopped being good when he and a bunch of and the principal writers kind of retired and passed off the torch, and then started focusing on Futurama, which everybody still has pretty fond memories of. And now he's just like, now him and I think David Cohen works on Disenchanted, but who was a big Simpsons writer.
Yeah.
So I thoroughly enjoyed that. And then there's one other real big thing that I checked out. But do you want to go ahead with another one?
I mean, if it's the same thing I'm thinking of.
Should we say it on three?
Okay.
One, two, three.
WandaVision.
Look at this. Yeah. Soulmates.
Yeah. So, yeah, we definitely have to talk about WandaVision.
We
got to
talk about WandaVision. We have to. Well, I mean, we had to talk about WandaVision last week before it came out. Now that it's come out, we have to talk about it.
Oh, for sure, yeah. One thing I do like, which you kind of touched on with Disenchantment there, I love that they're actually doing only a couple episodes at a time.
Oh, sure.
It forces me not to binge it.
Yeah, and that was the way, that's the way that Disney Plus did The Mandalorian, too.
Yeah.
So, and their other original show, Jeff Goldblum Explains the World or whatever, The World According to Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah.
Which I need to come back for another, I need it. Disney, I know you surreptitiously monitor these podcasts for any bad things that are said about you as a company. I apologize. Give me another season of Jeff Goldblum, The World According to Jeff Goldblum. He's everyone's cool uncle, and we need to see more of him.
Also, while we're at it, give RuPaul a show.
Hey!
Give him a show!
He guest starred on that new Muppets spinoff they had.
And in that Muppet show they did, too.
Somebody's got his number at Disney. They can give him a call and say, hey, could you make, like, a fun show, like, arts and crafts show for kids or something? Yeah. They gave Yvette Nicole Brown a game show. Yvette Nicole Brown played Shirley in Community. They gave her a game show. Like, they can give RuPaul, like, a fun game show that?
They gave Angela Kinsey from The Office. Angela.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they gave her, like, a baking show.
Yeah,
On Disney Plus.
And give Jillian from Workaholics a fairy godmother movie. So,
yeah. Yeah, for real. So yes, let's give RuPaul something.
But we got very sidetracked because we are here to talk about the first new title in Phase 4 of Marvel.
Yeah,
The MCU. It's not a cinematic universe technically because it's not a movie, but this is part of that universe, and this is the first new step in the post Infinity Wars Marvel world.
Yeah.
Man, are things gonna be really weird. Like, it's just, I mean, let's...
I guess
we gotta... How do we begin this?
I guess we just gotta start with what the two episodes were about.
We should, yeah.
Yeah, so episode one just kind of starts with 1960s-ish.
I was going to say 60s or 50s, yeah.
Yeah, late 50s, 60s type of show. Like an I Love Lucy type of show.
Clearly trying to play off of I Love Lucy. Yeah. That is the clear inspiration for the first episode.
Yeah.
Where
it's just like, her and Vision move into a brand new house. They have a wacky neighbor who seems to always have anything they need.
Well, they can never get her to shut up, just like every wacky neighbor in every sitcom at the time. Vision works at a company that's purpose is not really clear.
Yeah.
And his boss is just an unnecessarily angry guy. What's her name? Deborah Jo Rupp from That 70s Show playing his wife?
Yeah.
Perfect.
I just called her Kitty the whole time. Yes.
Perfect.
She's great.
She was amazing. And then it's so should we... The synopsis of the first episode is, like you said, they move it. It's like, oh no, there's a card on the calendar. What was supposed to be today, and they're both trying to figure out what it was. Wanda ends up thinking that it's their anniversary. Vision remembers that he invited their boss and his wife over to dinner.
Right, because they put a heart on the calendar.
And his last name is Hart.
Yeah.
And so there's some wacky sitcom kitchenette, like I Love Lucy bullshit going on.
Yeah.
Like, oh, he's a robot. He doesn't have emotions. Oh, she's a witch. She can cook with psychic powers. Like, and then suddenly things get not normal.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Was it because he said, damn it, or something?
No, I think it's that, like, he asked questions that
they
was
prepared
not
to
prepared.
Answer. So, yeah. So do you think that it's Wanda that's making this world, or that they are in some kind of, like, villain computer program or something?
It kind of seems... It has to be a mixture of both, because, like, obviously, like, if you know Wanda from the comics, she has the power to change all of reality.
And she's also incredibly unstable.
Exactly.
And they've explored her mental faculties for many, many episodes. And, of course, she is another fact about the Scarlet Witch and Vision. They are very famously in love in the comics. We've never seen that explored in any movies, because they've never been in any movies, really.
Well, no. Like,
Before this point, I mean, like, obviously in Civil War,
Infinity War,
they
were never the leads of those movies.
Exactly.
So, like,
exactly.
It wasn't focused on too much.
That's my point. That's a better way to put it. So they were never, their romance was hinted at, but never really focused on in any movies that they've been in. And they've never been in any movies as characters before the MCU. So, of course, people who don't know the comics don't know that this crazy, all-powerful mutant witch got knocked up by a robot man.
Yeah. which like, but like in the comics, he doesn't.
Yeah.
Like he can't. Like she makes them out of thin air, and that's the messed up thing.
It's but again, moving over to the second episode, that kind of happens.
Yeah.
She just randomly becomes like 3 months pregnant.
Yeah.
Like at the very end of the episode. And the second episode we should mention is a little more of like a 60s-70s era. Like
I think it's really playing off of like Bewitched and I Dream of Jeannie.
That's exactly what I thought too. And I thought I got a lot of vibes from the Munsters too. The walking about town. There was a lot of like it wasn't a set. It was multiple scenes and multiple sets. And that just wasn't from the time. So obviously every episode is going to be the prediction anyway is every episode is going to be like a different era of television history. But the crazy thing is, and this is not like about the weird happenings going on, although I'm hella intrigued about all that ish, what the hell is going on? Cause it's like every episode is just an episode of a sitcom.
Yeah.
And they do it perfectly, seamlessly. Like you feel like you're watching an episode of I Love Lucy, like spinoff. Like you feel like you're watching Mork for Mork spinning off from Happy Days, like watching the first episode, and then something weird happens.
Yeah.
So I don't know if any television show has ever kind of done that before.
I can't say so. Well, like looking at like the background of WandaVision a little bit, I know that they got like longtime actors like Dick Van Dyke, Betty White, and everything to like be in the room for the script writing.
Really?
Yeah. Because those are the kind of people who know.
Makes so much exactly sense. Yeah, it makes so much sense. The script and not even that, but the way Paul Bettany and Elizabeth Olsen act is so in keeping with how actors did it back then. Like these very overacting, like, you know, keep your three quarters face to the audience or whatever, like just stuff like that. Really seamless. So every episode so far, there's only two, every episode so far has been a perfect, like, insular snapshot of, like, a possible episode of, and they're episodes, and then something weird happens in every single episode that doesn't, like, break the fourth wall necessarily, but shows you, the viewer, that there is, in fact, a fourth wall that could or will be, that is fracturing at
some point. Something is wrong, and something is trying to also correct it.
So, like, I get why the first two episodes have had such a divisive reaction online, because clearly this is something that is bizarre. This is a weird way to tell a story, but the Marvel movies have always been really weird, you know? Yeah. Not this level of weird. But we've talked before how the Marvel movies have the capacity, an amazing capacity to fit into whatever genre they kind of want. And we as viewers, I think, are really craving that. We all kind of know that they can go different places with these characters. And I feel like, I can't help but feel that there's a very purposeful reason why this has come out before Captain Falcon and the Winter Soldier. I say Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
I mean, yeah.
and Loki and even the Scarlet Witch, the Black Widow movie. Because I feel like Marvel needs to, because the Black Widow movie is a prequel, but I feel like Marvel needs to, is sending a message like, things are going to get weird. We're going to start exploring with different ways to tell these stories. We know that the multiverse is coming. If it's Spider-Man 3, and if it's not directly addressed, it's going to be addressed in Doctor Strange. Like, it's going to happen.
Right.
And anyone who's read Marvel comics, or any comic that exists in a universe, knows that once you start talking about the multiverse, shit gets crazy.
Yeah.
Shit gets wild. And things is very convoluted is the only word, because it gets crazy. I feel like WandaVision is going to explore that a lot coming up.
Well, okay, so like two things I noticed right away that I'm like, these are going to be major parts for the show.
Sure.
I noticed at the end of the episodes, you get like a computer monitor and like a notebook and stuff. There's a logo. That logo is Sword from the comics.
No way.
I'm like, and Sword is like Shield, but they handle the space shit.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Is interesting.
So right there, I'm like, that's interesting. And one other thing is in episode two, they also do like commercial breaks, which is kind of funny.
And it's the same two people in every commercial break. I noticed that.
Yep. And it's not only that, but in episode two, the watch is called Strucker's watch,
and there's the Hydra logo on it. And in episode one, it was Stark brand toasters or whatever. Is that just a joke, or is that deeper meaning? I know that those people in those commercial breaks are going to be important later. They would not have recast them specifically for those roles if they weren't. Yeah. And I think we're gonna see a lot more, because all the characters, even though, like we've sort of explained, every episode kind of like skips a couple decades, the cast pretty much remains the same.
It seems like they're only gonna have like a dozen like actors outside of Wanda and Vision,
because that's what a sitcom would have done at the time.
Exactly.
But because we as the viewers know that something's not right, what does that mean? Who are these people? What are they? Did Wanda create them? Did Wanda trap them? Did whatever force is keeping them there trap them? Are they all victims? Are they all simulations? Are they Skrulls?
Oh my gosh.
What is... We know that Skrulls are coming, too. Marvel has mentioned that Skrulls are going to be returning as villains, but they're going to be much more prominent later on.
Yeah.
What if this is a Skrull simulation trying to mess with Wanda or something?
And then I'm just interested because Wanda's now pregnant, like you said. And that means we will get, in some way, Wiccan and Speed.
Yeah.
Who like, if you know Wiccan, marries a Skrull. Like, that's like a big part of his character.
So, I mean, we are like a couple minutes away from getting out the corkboard and the yarn and thumbtacks, man, and starting mapping this out. But I don't feel like we're that off base, man. I know somebody else somewhere on the internet is doing this exact conversation that we're having right now.
There are YouTube channels dedicated to this kind of
thing. So to anyone that I would say who wasn't impressed by the first two episodes of WandaVision, they gotta be building to something. We know they're building to something. I would say keep in it for the long haul.
Because, it's a slow burn. Yeah.
It's not that many episodes. It's like 8 episodes, right?
Yeah. The way I'm looking at WandaVision, and probably all these shows as well, is that they're gonna be like just extremely long movies, like once they're all out.
Exactly.
Like that. Yeah. Like you gotta just watch them all.
That's what Mandalorian was. Exactly. I mean, and you're still the only human being on the planet who hasn't watched the Mandalorian yet. Even though you kept your Disney Plus account without watching the Mandalorian. That's how dedicated you.
Yeah.
I said that to myself the other day. I was like, that's actually pretty impressive. Like you like Disney that much. Because everybody else deleted it right after the Mandalorian ended.
I mean, right now I'm catching up. I'm rewatching Gravity Falls, and now that's about it.
I rewatched Isle of Dogs and Frankenweenie because those are on the platform now.
Oh, I am going to check out an Amphibia.
I liked it. I watched it a couple of times, actually.
I know they have a great Kermit the Frog reference, and I just...
I don't know if that's on Disney Plus yet, because I think they only had one season. I haven't watched it in a while. No. But Amphibia is really good. I really liked it. It's another one of those... the overall story of the show is amazing, but every episode is pretty much pointless, and then it all builds to sort of something towards the end, and a really good finale for the first season, I have to say, is really good. But anyway, about the halfway mark, that's the pleasantries. We've got more than a few things to talk about, too. We've got a couple of news stories.
Yeah, so the first thing we kind of want to talk about here is that Nintendo is collaborating with a company called Starlight, to put in hospitals like a mobile gaming station.
Yeah, I know.
That's just such a good thing for them to do.
Dude, yeah, I had an asthma attack when I was in like third grade, and I had to spend like a weekend in the hospital, and that was like that. They didn't have cable. All I had was one VHS copy of Scooby Doo Meets the Boo Brothers and a Nintendo 64 with Mario Kart on it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, when I was a kid, I had a really bad hernia, so yeah, I had to stay in the hospital for a few days as well, and I had my Game Boy, and then, like, PBS.
That was also when my parents bought me my first Game Boy. it's come on. They're sick kids. Let them play video games, Mom.
For real, and it's one of those things, like, it only benefits. It does not hurt anyone.
What are they going to do? Yeah, like, what are you worried is going to happen? They're going to get worse? So this company is called Starlight. Does it say at all what they do? What they are known for?
I'm not seeing anything. Just that they tend to work with children's... with hospitals in general.
That's sort of what I was envisioning, kind of like a non-profit or something. That's kind of what I assumed.
It probably is more along those lines. Yeah, because I don't imagine... I've never heard Starlight as, like, a...
A game developer.
A game developer, medicine manufacturer.
I'm sure there was a game developer called Starlight. There's probably, like, 8 different game developers called Starlight that all went defunct in the 90s or something.
Dude, like, while watching The Boys, I just did a Google search of, like, Starlight comic book character, and I got, like, 20 results, and I'm like, oh, wow,
yeah. I feel like that's a name for everything. Anyway.
But, yeah, no, so every console will be loaded up with 25 Nintendo Switch games, and they're all the big games, and then a few of the smaller ones, things like Stardew Valley.
Oh, cool.
Cuphead, but then your Mario's, your Zelda's, Pokemon, Minecraft.
Oh, hell yeah!
Like, yeah, it's all on there, and it only benefits. Like, it's just a really nice thing.
Just a nice thing to do, man. Like, so Starlight, yeah. Let's look up for that, and if we learn anything more about the nature of this organization, like, is it something we can donate to? Something that you can write off on your taxes? We'll post it to the Facebook page. But yeah, it's just a fun little... It's a really nice... There's no other way to say it. It's nice to give sick kids nice things.
Okay, yeah. Starlight is a children's foundation. They, yep.
There you go.
Yep.
Try and find a donation link and put it on the Facebook maybe later.
Yeah, nonprofit organization. Yeah.
We have until this episode uploads, so, you know.
Like, yeah. No rush. All right. Let's stick with Nintendo, though. So, the Pokemon Company announced their... New Pokemon Snap.
Yeah.
They announced new Pokemon Snap, as well as just released a trailer saying, like, they're hitting their 25th anniversary this year.
And we posted it on Facebook when it happened with a question, and, like, 3 or 4 people responded. But I feel like we were going to do it anyway. Should our first video game live stream as a podcast be Pokemon Snap?
Yeah.
Yes, it should. Yeah. That's the answer.
Totally. Like, to me, that's kind of a perfect game to do a Let's Play to, because it's, like, it's not as involved as something like a fighting game.
Yeah, we're both, I don't want people to know how bad we are at certain games. I think Pokemon Snap, but real talk, I'm a beast at Pokemon Snap, dude. Like, I will, if there were rules to Pokemon Snap in, like, a contest, I would destroy everyone.
Yeah. No. I always get the best picture of Pikachu.
Yeah, you get him on the surfboard. That's the trick. You get him on the surfboard.
No, you get him electrocuting the... Electrode? I don't remember.
Zapdos egg.
Yeah, he does the Zapdos egg one. Zapdos egg. You're right. Yeah, man. Okay, yeah. But no, they announced the new Pokemon Snap, as well as... kind of talking about some of their other upcoming projects, although they have not announced yet, and the entire Pokemon world expects it. Diamond and Pearl remakes.
Yeah, I have heard of it. So they haven't officially announced it yet?
No, but it
seems like everybody's talking about it.
Everyone, like, assumes it's happening. And it's like, yeah, no duh. Like, they remade everything up to Gen 3. So, yeah.
Diamond and Pearl was, other than, I'd say, Gold and Silver, Diamond and Pearl is probably my favorite generation.
Honestly. I really like the starters, Chimchar, Turtwig.
I don't
like Piplup.
More so than any... I do think that the Pokemon designs for what is it, Gen 4, was that?
Yeah, that's Gen 4.
I do think they were better than Gen 3, and worlds better than Gen 5. But the thing... I don't know what it was. Like, what I loved more than anything about Platinum... I play Platinum. Just how much there was to do in that game after you beat the Elite Four. Like, yeah. I am always a sucker for a good post-game, and Pokemon Diamond, Sapphire, Emerald was okay, because they had that, like, Battle Island or whatever.
Yeah, but Battle Frontier. Yeah.
I can only do that so much before I, like, want to smack my head. There's no better post game than Gold and Silver. There is none, because the post game is literally just the first game.
Yeah.
like, time shifted. And they did that because they thought Gold and Silver were going to be, like, the last Pokemon games. Dumb. Yeah. I don't know. Just Diamond, Pearl, and Platinum had so much, like, the secret bases was way better than Gen 3. The excavation, like that, all that garbage, yeah. Like it was just so much fun. Or like even the stupid like mini games to make them snacks for your Pokemon, like stupid.
Oh stuff, yeah, dude. Yeah. The like, app or
there
were
so
blender
many
whatever,
weird
yeah.
mini games, so many like other things to do. Like I loved it. So I may get a Switch eventually. I don't know, but if the, Nintendo, if you're listening, and we know you are. Please make Diamond and Pearl do it. Like yeah. what do you not want more money? Like, what is keeping you from doing this? You have the technology. We've seen you do it before.
I mean, the real question only comes with like, in what way are we going to get a remake? Are we going to get it like in the vein of Let's Go Pikachu and Eevee, where it's literally baby's first Pokemon?
Yeah.
Like, they are. You don't battle to catch Pokemon. You just throw the ball.
I don't think you can... I don't think you can have Giratina in a goddamn Pokemon game and have it no battles. Like, that was the kicker for me for Diamond and Pearl. The most badass legendary, but yeah, I'm sorry.
He was cool.
Like... Arceus is god, whatever. Giratina is cooler. Giratina is the coolest legendary Pokemon.
Yeah. And Arceus technically wasn't even in the game because he was meant to premiere.
That's right.
With
yeah.
Giratina. Like, as a special event Pokemon.
See, yeah, like,
and he
Giratina,
just never came.
Giratina is like the essence of the void or the what the fuck ever, dude. He's a yeah. ghost dragon. He's fucking awesome.
Yeah, yeah. And then, yeah, Palkia and Dialga are space and time.
Totally cool. Like, yeah, they're totally cool, man. And then, yeah, yeah, you had. What was it? Kyurem being the I mean, Kyurem's cool and whatever, but like you're gonna give me a post-gen legendary Pokemon, post-game legendary Pokemon, like that is just a giant frozen T-Rex compared to this weird space noodle dragon. What the hell, man?
That is the best description I've ever heard of him.
Space noodle dragon. Space name noodle for the episode. Dragon. Space yeah. noodle dragon.
Yeah.
Do it.
And next time I play those games, that'll be his nickname.
Do it. That's your next Nuzlocke.
Space
noodle.
But yeah, among the with the 25 year anniversary, some things they've said is that we're going to be having a ton of merchandise come out, new things going on in the trading card game, the cool. anime as well. The anime right now is actually doing something very interesting. They're doing like Ash is now actually challenging the best trainers in the world. Like he's
he finally won the Elite Four.
He finally won in Elite Four, yeah. Yeah, so they're being like, he's catching the best Pokemon. He's caught like a Dragonite, a Gengar, a Lucario.
Dude!
Like, he's actually trying.
This is where he becomes red.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm guessing in Journeys, because he goes to every nation
yeah,
or whatever.
There's like a new co-lead character, right?
Yeah, his name's Go.
His name's Go? Like yeah. Pokemon Go?
Like Pokemon Go.
Okay.
Because all he wants to do is catch every Pokemon.
Okay. Well,
does not want to be a good trainer.
That's the right way to do it. That's how I always played Pokemon.
But so they're going to do new things with the anime, the games, the card game. And
I'm sure Pokemon Go will have something.
And obviously a ton of toys.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, why? Do you not want to make enough money, yeah. Nintendo? Like,
right now in the video game end, all they have announced is Pokemon Snap and a mobile game. That I am not interested
That's
in.
That's all you need, dude. Like, who the fuck cares about the mobile? Who the fuck cares about anything except Pokemon Snap 2? I've waited decades, literally decades, for a sequel to Pokemon Snap, dude. Like, I hooked on my N64 when I moved into my new place. I was playing it, like, 2 weeks ago. Like, that's how timeless Pokemon Snap is.
Dude, when the Wii U came out, I was like, this is where we're getting it.
You did? No, we were living together. We talked about this. There's like, why would you not make Pokemon Snap for the Wii U? They waited for the Switch, but it's still like the same. Makes yeah. sense. You got a little handheld thingy, like camera.
Exactly.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Like, perfect game. Like, there's nothing better. You can't change my mind.
Oh my
like,
goodness.
You know what's better than just throwing Pokeballs at Pokemon? Taking pictures of Pokemon. If you're going to be like, if you're going to be baby's first Pokemon, you might as well do a new concept, like photography.
Oh my gosh.
Because that's what Pokemon Snap kind of was at the time, too. It was like Pokemon, but with no strategy at all. Oh. It's perfect. It's great. I'm not knocking it. It's wonderful.
Yeah. Oh man. Yeah, I'm also waiting for them to bring back like Pokemon Stadium.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
just those rental battles.
Those were just simple, fun games, man. Yeah. You know, even like Colosseum, which had a story, was still like, was it a unique thing to itself?
Yeah.
You know? And then you also bring up the cross-platform capabilities, too. Like, because I remember if you caught a Pokemon in Pokemon Colosseum, you could trade it to Pokemon Ruby and Sapphire, and it would have, like, weird abilities and stuff.
Yeah, and in some cases, that was the only way you could get certain Pokemon to your game.
You get a Tyranitar. I got a Tyranitar that way.
Yeah. I can't get Pokemon Colosseum anymore, because now it costs, like, over $100.
Oh, sure. Like, all the good games that you remember are expensive. That is a sad truth to reality.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on to our next thing here. So there is a campground where you can go and experience a slasher film.
Yeah, I had not heard of this until you mentioned it before we started recording, and you didn't really elaborate too much. At first thought, I'd be down. I'm a horror movie guy, but like, I need a little more information before I can make a firm commitment.
It's just like, am I agreeing for them to actually kill me? No.
Well, here's the thing, though. I'm sure there's a horror movie that sets up with the premise of, you can be in a horror movie. Look how fun this is. And then suddenly it becomes a real horror movie. So I'm going to need a little bit more information before I make a commitment and give them my money. Thank you very much.
Isn't that one of the Halloweens?
Probably.
I think it is.
There's like 20 of them. I'm sure there's a Halloween where it's like...
The one with Exhibit.
Yeah, you're right. What? It's like... They're filming a reality show about Michael Myers. That's right. See, yeah, exactly, stuff like that. Or like, God, I know there's...
Wrong Turn 2, I think it
that's,
is.
Yeah, with the one with Henry Rollins. Yeah. That's another one where they're filming a reality show where a horror movie took place.
Yeah.
And suddenly it becomes a real horror movie. It's like, that's a trope, dude. It's like, so just off the top of my head, like, yeah... That'd be fun. That'd be cool. Run away from a knife wielding guy, and I've never done one, but I've seen zombie like 5Ks and stuff. Yeah. You know, we've got a zombie pub crawl that we do in the Twin Cities.
Have you ever done that?
I never have, and yeah. I mean, I always say I'm going to, and then I never do it.
And this was not the year to do it. So
you gotta pay for some of the drink tickets or stuff like that. So sure. It really is something that you gotta like. Get with your friends and plan to do it.
Yeah, it's a night. It's an event.
Yeah, but so yeah, like I mean, there people do haunted houses all the time. This is not a new concept. But how many haunted houses turn out to be real at the end? Probably less than I'm thinking.
Yeah,
in my head,
probably way
but,
less.
But still, then aren't we overdue for one? That's all I'm saying.
All right.
So go into detail. I've been.
You've been milking the concept, yeah.
Yeah, I've been lacerating this, and we haven't even explained it to me yet.
All right, so, so the camp is called Survive Slasher Camp.
Cool.
Like,
okay.
That's just what it's called.
Makes sense.
It's in Arizona, and essentially, they have events throughout the day, 3 25-minute games.
How many horror movies take place in Arizona, do you think?
Probably none.
I was gonna say The Hills Have Eyes, but I'm pretty sure that took place in like the California foothills. So close, but not like.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyways, yeah. So you pay for 3 25-minute games that are held throughout the night. In between the games, you will do things like regular camp stuff.
So
like
they're games.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of getting like almost an escape room vibe from this. But guess what? There a horror movie exists. Escape room.
Yeah.
Go on, Bobby.
Yeah. in each game, there will be 8 players that can team up against Jason, or you can just pay for your own solo trip through the whole thing.
And it's not specifically Jason?
This is just the one scenario, yes, but it is actually Jason.
Cool.
Well, actually. But,
might be Kane, the actor Kane Hodder, who played Jason in a lot of movies, or Derek Mears is another one who, in the most recent Jason movie, like, I could see them being down for them, like, for this. They're really cool guys. I've met them a couple times.
yeah, so you'll do, like, a pregame cookout, and, then it's like, and then the games begin. You'll hear the Jason sound of the, which I actually heard, it's going,
I heard
it's not the
originally when they when they came up with the sound effect, it just started whispering. Like I don't even know if they ever at the time were like, this is exactly what the sound is, but they just wanted it to sound vaguely reminiscent of the words kill and mama.
Yep,
and because that's kind of Jason Voorhees' whole thing. Yeah. Anyway, he kills people and he's got mommy issues. But yeah, so I mean, that makes sense.
Like, yeah, so yeah, just throughout the night, for three different 30-minute periods, he'll try and chase you and catch you. And then hit you with a plastic weapon. Like, that's it.
you know,
you do have to sign waivers and stuff, because of course you do. And it's only $25 a person. So really, it's whatever. That's
a great night. I mean, people do Halloween horror nights and stuff. Like, this just seems like a version of that for people who are... I'm sure people will do it. All I'm saying is I'm not going to do it the first weekend.
Like, that's the dude that's getting killed.
that's the weekend where things go wrong. anyway, yeah, no, like, it's something interesting. Is there so right now all we know about Jason Voorhees, is there any interest in like licensing more like horror movies?
So in some of the pictures they have, they do have that they do have other horror icons. The only one they mention is Freddy.
Oh, okay.
Which, yeah, but also not really.
Well, you can't
his environment.
You don't run away from Freddy through the woods. You run away from him through like boiler rooms and creepy dreamscapes and stuff.
Yeah, it is like the only other characters you could really do with this kind of setting is like Leatherface.
Yeah,
and like Michael Myers, I guess.
Yeah, couldn't do Pinhead like that one. I mean, that's not how Pinhead does things at all. Yeah. Like,
and good luck finding someone to play
you.
Chucky.
Yeah, Pinhead don't chase you. He just kind of rips you apart. And also, Chucky's like an urban monster. He's never been at summer camps or anything. I think his name was like Victor Crowley. He was like it was basically a Friday the 13th ripoff, but it takes place in Louisiana, and Kane Hodder, the guy who plays, I already mentioned, who has played Jason Voorhees, plays him. The movies are called Hatchet. Yeah. But yeah, you could do that guy, like totally. Yeah. There are other, like, I think you could do a lot of like lower budget horror, syndications that like,
it is one of those things like you'd think that Jason's a big enough grab, name wise, but then it is like, you're not going to get repeat business.
You could also probably make up some, like, scenarios. Stopping them from doing that. But you're right. Like, Jason Voorhees is like the grab. He's like, live in a Friday the 13th movie. Yeah. You don't do that.
Yeah. But yeah, if you had like Leatherface with, you know, a chainsaw that has no chain on it, like, go for it.
They do them at haunted houses. I'm sure they could do a chainsaw. Exactly. Like, I've seen chainsaws in haunted houses all the time.
Yeah, for real.
From a distance. I don't do haunted houses.
No. Okay. When I was really young, my mom dragged me to the Trail of Terror. Which which is like here in Minnesota, that's just like the place you go at Halloween for the most part.
That's one of the big ones. I mean, every state has like the horror attraction industry is, there have been documentaries. It really isn't a thing unto of itself, because it's this industry that predicates all of its money in these, like, it's like the Spirit Halloween stores. Like, just this brief window of time, everybody's all about it.
Yeah.
You know, and these people like dedicate so much of their lives to this like chunk of this window of the year. But yeah, Trail of Terror is probably one of the bigger ones in Minnesota. Yeah. I'd say, certainly.
First time my mom drags me there, I did not want to go. Yeah. I don't like getting scared.
I don't either. I don't do haunted houses, man. I can't do it.
But in that night, there were just two instances where I was scared, like, that I pissed my pants. One of them was that they took us on the hayride, and then a dude comes up in the chainsaw and, like, literally gets, like inches from my face with it.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. So, obviously, I'm freaked out there. I'm, like, 8.
Yeah. And you're a black man in a horror movie, and that's never good.
No. No. And then the other time, my mom was walking with me through, like, the clown haunted house.
Oh, good.
Which... fuck that noise.
Fuck that noise. Dude, I don't even...
And then she lets go of my hand and runs ahead, leaving me alone.
Your mom had a weird parenting strategy. I can finally say that now to you. Like, it's been long overdue, I gotta say.
she thought I would just walk through it, but no, like a kid, I get in the fetal position and start crying.
You know, like a child.
Yeah. So, literally, one of the clown guys, like, just stands over me and he's just like, are you okay, kid?
Has he broke a character to help you out?
Yeah.
The killer clown took pity on a young digital.
It's
just
like... it's like, I'm not better now that you're talking to me.
That's like, it's like, if they ever made, like... Bobby Digital Begins, the movie. Like, that would be the Bruce Wayne in the bottom of the well with the bats. Like, just Bobby lying on the floor with the clowns. Like, why do we fall, young Bobby Digital? It's like, don't kill me! I'm 8 years old! This is terrible!
Oh my gosh, no.
My life will never be the same in 20 years. I'll start a podcast with my long-haired friend. And that's how the movie will. It writes itself.
Yeah, no, oh my gosh, yeah. Haunted House is already like a big fuck you. And you actually said, you just said yourself, so you don't like
Haunted Houses. I don't do it, man. I love horror movies. I don't do Haunted Houses. I can't do them, man. Yeah.
It's the level of immersion.
There's like, a suspension of disbelief that you are privileged to when watching a horror movie and that you know that you can turn off the TV at any time. Or like, look somewhere else. Like, if there's clowns circling around you with chainsaws, I can't just look the other way. Nope. Can't do it, man.
That's the same reason I couldn't play Resident Evil 7 on VR.
Yeah. But kudos to the people who did that. I heard it was great, too.
Yeah, no, because first time I experienced that was through VR, and I was literally, and this is like early in the game, you're crawling under the house, and then you just hear shit around you. Like, I look behind me, there's some monster just, like, quickly running at me. I'm just like, nope.
In VR.
Forget that.
Dude. Oh, man.
Oh, man. The only thing that would have made it more immersive is if there was some smell.
Well, we are easily frightened individuals, and we've established that now for all the internet to know. We are at the 50-minute mark, thereabouts. We've got a... How many more we got to go through?
We just got, like, one story we can talk about here real quick.
Yeah.
So, you know the company Arcade 1-Up. They produce home arcade cabinets.
Oh, yeah.
They just announced, 3 new cabinets. Or 4, actually.
As a man who used to work at, I worked at an arcade for, years, at a mall. And, it's like, you always ask, how do arcades stay in business? For the most part, they don't. But, how do arcades stay in business? Actually, a huge part of profits that mall arcades make is selling their cabinets.
Yeah.
Like, they'll exchange them out. Like, if a cabinet has been at one location for too long, they'll bring it to another location to see if it's more profitable there. Like, it really is an interesting industry. I wouldn't call it a growth industry in any degree, but for like for individuals, I mean,
it sounds like a circular economy type of deal there.
Like you don't you can't. I mean, I think anyone in the listening audience would probably has an inkling, and we will verify this. There are two men sitting at a table recording a podcast right now who probably would buy an arcade cabinet if they were independently wealthy, and their names are Graves and Digital. But
well, that's the great thing about 1-Up Arcade because or Arcade 1-Up, they make them affordable for us.
Mm.
They are still like I think the cheapest you can find them is $200.
We should mention that we're not being paid by Arcade 1-Up for this, but we could be if they're listening.
No, yeah, I think the cheapest cabinet they have is $200, but they just announced they're coming out with 4 brand new ones. The games loaded up on them are so one of them is Rare. Themed. Oh. So it's got Killer Instinct and Battletoads and Battletoads / Double Dragon.
Can I tell you something? Maybe a mistake to just admit to the internet I've never played Battletoads.
I mean, I haven't either.
Oh,
if
really?
I'm honest.
It seems like that's the game that everybody, like 5 years older than us, can't shut up about. They're always talking about Battletoads.
I know it's hard as balls.
Is it?
Like, yeah.
I was just like, I don't think I learned that it was a thing that existed until I was like 18.
See, and I worked at GameStop at a time when there was this prank that was very popular of just calling GameStop like, do you have Battletoads?
Oh, yeah.
It's like, and I would just answer
and
like,
did
yeah.
you?
No.
Okay.
But I would just answer yes. Would you like to pre-order one? You have to come into the store.
Would you like to pre-order Battletoads?
Yeah.
Yeah, take that.
But yeah, I've never played Battletoads either, but Killer Instinct I fucking love.
Yeah, Killer Instinct's great.
Killer Instinct's amazing.
It's like Mortal Kombat, but not.
Yeah. The other cabinets they have is Dragon's Lair / Space Ace.
The toughest games.
Oh my gosh.
Dude, never played either of those, but I have watched playthroughs of them. Yeah.
I haven't. We can play it.
Dude, it's like, okay, it's cool getting that, but when you used to have to pay to play that game.
Yeah.
Like, how many thousands of dollars did they make from people putting, like, you have to memorize every room in that game to get to the end. It's insanity. Like, absolutely nuts.
Yeah.
Don Bluth, make us another one. Or like a movie to go along with it or whatever.
So a couple of years ago, Don Bluth actually was raising money to make a Dragon's Lair movie.
I don't think he knows how Kickstarter works. Because I just remember that like not hearing about it when it launched and then not hearing about it at all afterwards.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, he needed.
He's
to
very old.
Come up with.
You gotta get him some slack.
He is one of the OG. Like, he worked on like Sleeping Beauty and stuff.
Yeah, he's one of the original like Disney animators, and he was once still like I don't. I'm sure this. I don't know if this record's ever been beaten. The Secret of Nim was, at the time, the only non-Disney animated movie to premiere the same time a Disney movie premiered and beat it at the box office. I think it was, like, The Secret of Nim versus, like, Robin Hood or something? Like...
Which that tracks.
Yeah. And it was... And I just remember reading that. Like, it's... He's the only animator... Maybe somebody's beaten that record by now, but at the time, like, it was such a huge deal that this guy who just made these movies... Yeah. Like, he wasn't a studio, he wasn't an industry, like, this was just some guy and a couple of other animators working on this stuff.
It was, but, like, it's the same story of DreamWorks, where it was a bunch of pissed off ex-Disney employees.
True.
Like, we're like, we're gonna make our own thing.
Yeah, that tracks, man. Like, just, I mean, we're already so off topic, but I just want to mention that Guillermo del Toro did, like, an art show at the Minnesota Institute of Art a couple years ago.
Yeah.
And he has some of Don Bluth's, like original concept art for Sleeping Beauty and Alice in Wonderland.
Oh, man, amazing, see, like, dude. I see animation cells for his movies all the time, and I would love to own one.
Yeah.
Like,
even a stupid one. Like, I would love to, man. Movie animation cells are harder to come by than television animation cells, because they made more of them for television. But yeah, like,
and the more popular the movie, the more expensive. Obviously.
Dude, just like an animation cell from Secret of Nim, I would frame, dude.
For real,
that's so like anything, like the chicken getting tied up, or it was a crow, right? Like the crow getting tangled up in that yarn. The stupidest scene in that movie. I would frame an animation cell of that scene,
dude. I know that, like, if I actively was like, I'm gonna get an animation cell from Don Bluth, it would be something like
Rockadoodle.
I was gonna say Rockadoodle or Thumbelina.
Yeah, dude, that beetle ball scene from Thumbelina was lit AF, dude. Gilbert Gottfried up in there, like, yeah, dude.
Oh my god.
Or just literally any scene from Rockadoodle. Rockadoodle's a masterpiece.
Okay.
Most underrated film of Don.
Okay, I guess Eric loves Rockadoodle.
I am biased, because that might be the first... No, I think How the Grinch Stole Christmas starring Boris Karloff might have been my first VHS that I ever owned when I was like 3.
Okay.
Rockadoodle was a close second then.
Yeah.
So I, like, from age 3 onward, watched that movie ad nauseum.
Yeah.
So yes, I am a fan of the movie Rockadoodle.
Since we are talking about Don Bluth, just real quick...
this wasn't what we were talking about.
It wasn't.
We have to talk about him.
No, yeah, we have to, because he's just not going to pop up otherwise.
We spent how long talking about Craig McCracken? We got to talk about Don Bluth. Come on.
Yeah, Don Bluth. So, I actually bought... In my house, I have a bunch of movie posters hanging up, and we just bought...
Really? Where?
We just bought The Land Before Time. Like,
yeah.
Oh my gosh. Land Before Time.
That's your favorite.
That is my favorite.
But,
All Ducks Go to Heaven is a close second, though.
That is a good one, too.
Yeah.
I like both of them, too, even though the first one's better, but I did love All Ducks Go to Heaven.
Yeah. Anyways, the other two cabinets they're making are a Pong cabinet.
Oh, that's right, we were talking about arcade cabinets.
Yes! Yes!
Pong cabinet, right.
Yeah. A Pong cabinet, and the other one is the X-Men arcade cabinet.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. That's the... Oh, my God. Yeah, a friend of ours tagged us in that.
Yeah.
Because, and I'm sure that they've moved the cabinet. There's a barcade called Up Down in downtown Minneapolis. And that is... It's a great place. Me, Digital, and a couple of friends of ours got the high score on the leaderboard for the X-Men arcade cabinet.
Yeah, we all claim number
twice,
one.
Right?
Yeah.
I think because when you beat it, they let you go do it again to double your score. And
yeah.
I think we beat it a full 2 times. Man, there was a friend Kyle, man. He just he must have been like a mint that he dropped on tokens for that for that card game.
He must have thrown like $50 through the machine just like here.
Dude, but yeah, I was playing Wolverine, you were playing Colossus. We both got number one on the leader, like, just all on that.
Yeah.
It was by like a lot, too.
Yeah, it was
and
not
it's
a small
weird
margin.
Thing to be bragging about, but this means so much to us. So, yeah, if there was ever a $200 arcade cabinet that I would buy if I was independent, well, they might be the X-Men arcade cabinet.
See,
real.
And you know what? I sit here on the fence because, like, so this is coming out, but they already have the Ninja Turtle one.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, those
are the two. Those are the two, Bobby.
Like, those are the two best. I would maybe do, like...
Throw the Simpsons arcade game in there, too, man.
Oh, my God, yeah, if they made the Simpsons arcade. Like, the only thing that I would be like, is if they made, like, a Marvel vs. Capcom 1 and 2.
Sure,
like, put
sure.
that on one machine.
Yeah. Yeah, dude.
I miss arcades.
I mean, they're definitely listening to this podcast right now, so they'll probably get the memo, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously they have Capcom's, like, interest in making these arcades because this X-Men is a Capcom game.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. And, oh, that X-Men arcade also comes with Captain America and the Avengers and the Avengers game.
No, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, there's nothing stopping arcade cabinets from keeping multiple games inside them. You know?
Apparently you can mod them so that they, or not even modding, you literally have to just open the circuit board mess with a couple things. And you unlock everything that 1UP Arcade has the license to.
It's essentially just a simplified console inside a machine. And now modern day consoles, they have all of this connectivity. Like, yeah, I've heard of people doing that all the time, man. Like, not just on these arcade cabinets either. We are nearing the end. Is there anything you want to talk about real quick, like a minute, 2 minutes maybe?
Sure. Jamie Lannister?
Jamie Lee Curtis?
Jamie Lee Curtis, thank you.
Oh, there you go, okay.
I lost the story, so that's why I wasn't remembering her name. But, yeah, Jamie Lee Curtis. Mm-hmm. Has kind of just announced that she's a weeb. Like, she loves One Piece and stuff.
So let me get this straight, Bobby. So last week, it's Jim Belushi.
Yeah.
And now it's Jamie Lee Curtis.
Yeah.
What is it about these aging Hollywood celebrities? It's like a mass exodus. The Websidus. They're all... It's so weird. So should we end this episode recommending some anime to Jamie Lee Curtis? If she's into One Piece, it seems like she's already got a little bit of a nose in the game ahead of Jim Belushi.
Yeah, I think it actually says that she's always just been. Like, okay. That One Piece is her favorite show, but she's always just been, like...
So let's go for some weird anime to recommend for Jamie Lee Curtis. She seems to know what she's talking about.
Yeah.
Should I go first, or should you?
Okay, yeah, you go first. Let's hear your weird pick.
I mentioned it on the show once before. Rise Up Animal Road. Just a masked wrestler, just saving animals and suplexing princesses.
Okay, ooh, shoot. Okay. This is hard for me.
This is a tough one. These
I'm trying to think of weird ones that we didn't say for the Jim Belushi one.
Well, it's because usually we recommend anime to people who don't watch anime. Now we're recommending anime, like, the weirdest anime. The ones that we would never recommend to beginners.
Yeah. Just a little part of this Jamie Lee Curtis thing is that some fans are saying, like, hey, let's get Jamie Lee Curtis to be in the live-action adaptation on Netflix of One Piece.
I'm gonna just if she was a real One Piece fan, she'd say no,
and I'm sure she would. I'm sure, but at the same time, money.
At the same time, money.
A steady paycheck. I cannot think of like an anime right off the top of my head. Fooly Cooly.
Yeah, perfect. Well, Jamie Lee Curtis has probably already seen that, but there's a new season. Yeah,
there's a new season. I still haven't watched it.
I watched one episode. It's very good. Yeah. It's very good. I'll go back. Darling in Franxx.
Yeah, you're way more into anime than I am.
I watch a lot of them, man. I leave them on. You know, Darling in Franxx, it's robots that are powered by fucking.
Fuck.
So you're going to watch it now.
Yeah, now I think I kind of have to. Okay. The later seasons of Digimon. Because no one's watched them.
It's true, I haven't.
No one's fucking watched them. No one I know.
I haven't done it, yeah.
Like, I stopped at Tamers.
Let's see.
I'm a normie. Flint the Time Detective.
Flint the Time Detective! Alright, I guess I'll, we're way over time. But of course we were gonna be. I guess I'll end this one with one more. Let's say... I got it. Berserk.
Oh, fuck yeah, Berserk.
Berserk.
Berserk is cool.
Yeah, man.
I was gonna say Ghost Stories, if you know that one.
I don't know that one.
That one's fun. It's kind of like your Samurai
Pizza Tokyo Cats. Ghoul. Ah, Samurai Pizza Cats. I love the Samurai Pizza Cats.
It's kind of like that where,
Bobby Digital, who are you gonna call when you want some pepperoni? The Samurai Pizza Cats. Speedy Ceviche, he's the leader of the bunch. The Mighty Fine Fighter makes a mighty fine lunch, but we are going to need to end it there before I can sing the rest of the Samurai Pizza Cats. We got to get that. We got to cue that bird already. We got to get him out of there. That's another reference to Samurai Pizza Cats. Anyway, this has been the Digital Graveyard. Thank you again. We mean it. Thank you. Sean Wheeler and Sam Dunn for the use of our theme song. Eric Castellanos Art, a.k.a. the Dapper Skull, for the use of our logo. Make sure to like, share, and subscribe if you like what we're listening. We're trying to get better. We are working on getting some better equipment up here. We finally don't have to do this via Skype, and we are glad for that. But if you want to reach out, you can always hit us up on Facebook at the Digital Graveyard, on Twitter at @digital_graveyard, or email digitalgravecast@gmail.com. And that is how you get a hold of Eric Graves and Bobby Digital. Bobby, play us out.
I'm done.
I'm going to get you like an air horn or a soundboard or something.
Something. One of these days. Or do you want me to start singing a theme song?
I mean, we already have a theme song.
Kirby, 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 that's the name you should know.